Good morning. My name is Ken, and I'm an alcoholic.
Amen.
You're very brave people to be up at this hour of the morning, I'll tell you that. It's hard to believe you could get drunks up at 10 o'clock on a Saturday morning. You know, like I don't know about you, but I'd be generally cruising at that point. I'm here, to talk about spirituality. So I want to quote what the Buddhists say first so you know where I'm coming from. And that the Buddhists say, he who speaks does not know. He who knows does not speak. So basically, I like this topic because it's very close to my heart and particularly to my soul. The word spirituality has a lot of implications to it for a lot of people, and they get it tied up with religion. And that's not the way it was meant to be in Alcoholics Anonymous. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is probably one of the most spiritual books you could possibly read, because whenever they get to a point where they're challenging you to do something, they say, but if you think you can do it another way, go ahead. it's not that dogmatic. Bill and the boys, when they put the big book together, which I like to refer to as the owner's manual, you know, when they gave us this owner's manual, it was something that when stuff started to hit the fan, you know, when the shit hits the fan, it's not always dispersed evenly. So when the stuff started to hit the fan, they wanted you to have something to use as a text or a reference, something you could go back to. And one of the things I discovered early on for me was when I looked at the word spirituality and I prayed about it and focused on it, I noticed that inside the word spiritual is the word ritual, R-I-T-U-A-L. And what happens in Alcoholics Anonymous, as far as I can see, is when you come here, you learn a ritual that allows you to expand the depth of who you are. The person that you brought here obviously cannot stay sober, so you have to get rid of that person. So basically, you have to kill the person you brought here. And you kill that person by doing the steps and working the traditions and trying to practice the concepts in all your affairs. It's not very ethereal. It's very basic. And the guys who wrote the book were a combination of street people and would-be spiritual people. You know, they were a combination of both. Somewhere, I don't know how Bill Wilson did it. Maybe it was divinely inspired. I don't know, but Bill learned early on, and he wrote about it in his own story. He wanted a God that was not limited and knew no time. I want a God who knows no time and no limitation. Somehow, and again, I don't know how he did this, he was able to see that the minute you introduce time into life, you begin to limit what you can get done. Because now you create stress to get this done, to get that done. The way I see it is that we were all sent out from the home office okay. You know, we were just sent out okay. You know, go do it now. You know, and we were all okay. But somewhere along the line, we got it in our heads, in our hearts, and in our souls that we weren't okay, and we had to do something else. And that began a journey away from God. And if you look at anybody in the program and you listen to their story, it consists of three stages. What it was like when they were just growing up. Then what happened. And what happened is the journey away from God. It's like the prodigal son story. You have to leave God to find God. So everybody leaves, and then the stories vary in there as to what takes place. But eventually, if you get sober, the journey is back. You know, what's going on right now? Becoming aware. And God has such a great sense of humor. You know, he looks at us and he goes, you know, he said, I can't believe I gave him so much and they feel so inadequate. You know, like, I don't know how that happens. You know? And you look at the trouble all over the world. I mean, I don't care what part of the world you look at. Religion somehow is causing a problem. And, you know, you would think, I mean, I know this is a very challenging depth, but you would think that somebody would come forward, some speaker, some diplomat, and say, you know what? Christians believe in one God. Muslims believe in one God. Jews believe in one God. Let's just pretend for a moment that they're right. What the hell's the problem? You know, like, you're all sent out from the same home office by the same guy and your brothers and sisters. When did all this nonsense start? And the nonsense start when you begin to know that what you believe is right. And what the other guy believes is confusing. You know, he's a little confused. If he only understood what I knew, hey, yo, we'd be okay. You know what I mean? You know? So, but the bottom line is that, you know, in the end, there's no doubt in my mind that in the end, God is in such hot pursuit of all of us that none of us escape. None of us escapes. He lets us go play and do dopey things and see how stupid we can be. But eventually, no one escapes, you know? William James, who's quoted in the Big Book, has written a book called Varieties of Spiritual Experience. In fact, the Big Book, in some degree, is predicated on what he wrote. And he said, you must get to a point where you go beyond reason. And that's where alcoholics are very, very limited. Going beyond reason. Because alcoholics are trying to escape from a reality they're not even in, you know? And so it creates a lot of pressure, you know, like we have absolutely no idea what's going on. There's a story they tell about the lion, which could be the alcoholic story. And the lion goes up to the zebra and he said, who's the king of the jungle? And the zebra said, you, Mr. Lion, you're the king of the jungle. And he says, yeah, and don't you forget it. And then he goes up to the tiger and he says, who's the king of the jungle? And he says, you, Mr. Lion. He says, correct, don't you forget it. Goes to the giraffe and several other animals. Finally, he gets to the elephant. And he says, who's the king of the jungle? And the elephant snaps him up by the tail, spins him over his head two or three times, throws him about 50 yards through the air. He hits his head on a tree and slides down. And as the lion's getting up and he's dusted himself off, the elephant's walking away. And he goes, hey, yo! Just because you don't know the right answer, that's no way to behave. You know? So that's where we are in the spiritual development, you know? It's like we don't know, but we want to know, so we pretend to know. And that's why when you listen to all the folks who like have TV shows about this stuff, it always ends up with send us something, you know? And that's not a God deal, send us something. It's not what's in us that counts. It's what comes out of us that counts. You know, I go to a lot of meetings and I listen to people and they seem to feel that the whole program revolves around what they think, what they believe, and what they feel. Oh, there's a lot of feel meeting. Oh, I don't feel. I'm not feeling good today. I didn't feel good yesterday. And I would use some words, but this is a public deal, so I won't say them. But basically, if you're one of these people, I want to say something to you. And I'm saying it to you, as we used to say in the city, with all due respect. You know? Nobody cares. Nobody cares how you feel. Nobody cares what you believe. Nobody cares what you think. That's not what Alcoholics Anonymous is about. It's about what actions do you take and what actions do you refuse to take that will help you grow. You know, I have an edition two of the Big Book, of the Owner's Manual, and in there's a story about a playwright, and in that playwright story he talks about there being only two sins The first sin is to interfere in the growth of another human being. And the second sin is to interfere in your own growth. And that's what basically happens. When you start to tell somebody else what they need to do, you're interfering with their growth. Their growth has to be like, you know, just like the animal kingdom. We all grow through an evolutionary process. And the process is you start out thinking you know something, only to find out you don't really know. You know, as Bill and I were talking briefly last night, basically about the fact that as you're here longer, you realize you know less. Yesterday, Owen and Peggy were nice enough to take Carol and I down to the aquarium. And one of the trick questions at this little question and answer thing they had was, and I was on my toes because I was trying to get it right, and said, how much of the Earth's surface is covered by water if you include all the rivers and lakes and oceans? And the answer was 97% of the Earth's surface is covered by water. And I thought to myself sitting there, how little I know about 97% of the place where I live. So how am I supposed to understand spiritual stuff where I don't have a clue what's going on? You know? And I went to parochial school, and I have no problems with parochial school. The nuns were very good to me. They were very patient, and they taught me, and they kicked me out in the fourth grade, but they were very, very patient. And they didn't know certain things either. And it's not their fault. They just didn't know. For example, one day I saw two dogs getting it on in the parking lot. And I said to the nun, what are they doing? And she said, they're dancing. And I immediately said, they're not even facing one another. You know what I mean? You know? And so that scarred me for life, you know? Because now, no matter where I am and no matter what I'm feeling spiritually, when I hear them play that da-na-na-na-na-na, da-na-na-na-na, man, I get up out of the seat, I'm like, hey, let me on the end of that Congo line, you know? Like, so, you know, like... and the deal is that that's what life is about. It's about people giving you information that they don't know so that they can lead you in a direction where you don't know. And the greatest thing about it is thinking you know what you don't know and being willing to share it with anyone. Anyone. And being willing to share it any time, even when you're not asked. You know, like, we're talking about dogs and all. You know, I had an elephant once. You know, like, a guy jumps in there with some total different thing. You always know when you're working with newcomers because they're constantly interrupting. You know? Their little synapses are just starting to reach the other side. And they think it's growth. You know, like, And really what it is they're just getting a little bit conscious. And I hear people say the most unbelievable things, you know. And all I would say to anybody in this room, how many people have less than a year here? Good, welcome. Good. But if someone gives you information, you want to get in the habit of telling them right away, you know, I'm a newcomer. I have less than a year. And I'm trying to learn this. So would you please show me in the big book where you got this information? You know? And you will hear words like, I think, perhaps, maybe, I really don't know. Joe told me that. You know? And so the deal is sometimes we have people not doing what they think is AA and getting in trouble with it when in fact it has nothing to do with AA whatsoever. And Bill Wilson, and I said, and the boys, seemed to understand this. It says in my book, we suffer from a spiritual malady. And it says in my book that when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. Mentally and physically. For a number of years, had you asked me directly, what is the spiritual malady, I would have given you a lot of misinformation predicated on what I thought I knew, which I didn't know. And then I reached a point for me where I began to see what the spiritual malady is for me. And that is not living in the moment I was in. I had great difficulty in living in reality. I mean, I didn't mind doing drive-bys, but staying there all the time, you know, just was unbelievable, unbelievable. You know, it was just one of those things. And the reason it was unbelievable was because my mind was always reflecting back on garbage that had happened in the past or projecting out phantom stuff that was going to happen in the future. Did you ever notice that about 98% of the stuff you think about in the future never happens? And the other 2% happens so fast you don't have time to think about it. It just happens. And that's the reality of growing spiritually. Growing spiritually to me is learning to live in the moment that you're in. In my owner's manual, there's a line, maybe one of the most powerful lines in the big book. And it says, there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him Thursday. You know, like, The secret is to find him now. God is always in the now. So when I'm thinking about the past or the future and I'm not in the now, I am not with God. I'm doing something else. And that's why people come to meetings and say, I feel alone. I feel separated. And they always have the proverbial hole in this chest. I got a hole in my chest and I feel the wind blowing through. And I'd get a zipper, you know. And the deal is that you look and you just say, you know what? What are you thinking about right now? And the reason that people have trouble staying in the now is because at some depth we know that if we were to constantly surrender to God's will in the moment, who we think we are would cease to exist. And nobody wants that. I mean, they want to get close to it. You know, the old spiritualists used to tell a story about the saints. When I was a kid and we used to hear about the saints in school, and they were just very supposedly spiritual people. And the saints would walk up to the fire. Spirituality was always represented by fire. They would walk up to the fire and they'd walk into the fire and they'd be so disfigured by the fire they could never go back to who they were before. That was passé. And then the rest of us walk up to the fire and we want to live our lives as close to the fire as possible so we can stay warm. But we never want to get burnt because that's the ceasing to exist part. And so we walk around the fire, talk about God, talk about all the things we'd like to do, and then for some reason we just don't jump in because we know that once that happens, there's no going back. You know, with the guy that we talk about in the big book, St. Francis, I don't know if you ever read anything about St. Francis, but St. Francis was born into wealth, and he completely walked away from the wealth to follow a voice that he heard. And that voice was God, supposedly talking to him, telling him to go and do something. And St. Francis dedicated his life to two things. I know he was no alcoholic. The first was to live in poverty. And the second was to be homeless. I'm from New York. I can tell you, it's very difficult to get leverage on a guy like that. You know, you can't get much leverage on a guy who says, hey, I don't want anything, and I want to live in the street. You know, like, eh. So how do you manipulate that guy? You know, like, he's very difficult. And he's our guy. That's the guy we want, in theory. But in reality, it's maybe not the guy we want. And so this whole spiritual development is about learning, as the big book said, to grow and feel things. You know, as we become conscious of his presence, we will lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. We'll be reborn. A consciousness. And a consciousness happens when? In the presence. You know, just remind anybody to that they can get sober. All they have to do is what? Trust God, clean house, work with others, and have a conscious contact with God as what? They understand him. You know, this. It, everything is about we're giving you the ability to make the decisions that are going to basically run your life. And this stuff pervades over the whole culture today. There's all kinds of books out there about Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, I see more literature about what we are and what we do. And fortunately, none of it really pertains to us. You know? And the book says it best, because the book talks in terms that are very simple. It says, when the alcoholic drinks, something happens. You know? Very concise, you know. And that's the way Bill and the boys wrote this thing, like, very concise. So what happens if I drink? Something. And what is that something going to be? You'll find out. You'll go drink, you know. And the deal is, if you think you want to try something, go and try it. And when it doesn't work, come on back. We'll be here for you. And so the whole deal of spiritual growth in Alcoholics Anonymous was starting from this groundswell of service, being of service to other people. This whole thing, every step is just getting me ready to be of service to other people. Every tradition is getting me to be of service. Every concept is getting me to be of service. If I don't want to be of service, it's like, you know, if you wake up in the morning and you're a rose, and you want to be a daffodil, you're in for a long day, you know, like it's a long day, you know, because that's just not the way it works. And you get to have glimpses of this, and that's what we have. We don't have a steady, I don't know of anyone who has a steady ongoing connection with this higher power. Bill's term was about as best as you could say it. You can be plugged in, but you're not always connected, but you're always plugged in. And the deal is you can become connected anytime you consciously want to do that. But most of us get caught up in the distractions of life. And every now and again, and even in the 12 and 12, it talks about the fact that we will have glimpses of God's ultimate reality. And his ultimate reality is for us to live a good life. And not only for us to live a good life, but to live a life of service. You know, and that's why Bill and the boys in Pass It On and in other literature, they talked about sometimes the good is the enemy of the best. Because what happens is you can get to a point in AA where your life is working. In other words, you got the good job, you're in the terrific relationship for the 17, 18th time. You know, like, yeah, everything is... You're on a roll, as we say. Hey, he's on a roll, you know. And the deal is that you get totally distracted from what's going on in terms of wanting to be of service. Can you pick this guy up and take him to a meeting? No, I'm not going to be available to do that. Can you do this? Can you do that? Can you do some general service work? No, and suddenly you have all the benefits of being sober, and that's good, but it's not the best because it's not what God wants you to be doing. And every now and again, in everyday life, I bump into this. I bump into something, and it's an immediate reminder of what's going on. Out in our area, we have an area where kids fly kites. And they fly these kites down by Seaport Village, and they're beautiful, beautiful kites. And in June in San Diego, we get what's called June gloom. And the June gloom is the clouds are low, and when you go down there, you can't see the kite. So I love to talk to kids because they're the only one seems to know what's going on. You know, like, so I was walking along and there was this kid, he was about 10 or 11 years old. And I looked at him and I said, "How do you know your kite is still there?" And he looked back at me and without losing a beat, he said, "'Cause I can feel the pull of it, mister." And that's the way recovery and spiritual growth is. When I'm doing God's will, I can feel the pull of it. When I'm not doing God's will, I can feel the pull of that too. And when I'm in a neutral stage, I don't feel any pull at all. You know, it's like you know that you should be doing something else. And so you get in the habit, the routine, the ritual of doing certain things. You know, you hear sometimes people say, "I don't like to go to that meeting because I don't get anything out of it." Did you ever think of putting something into it? You selfish self. Well, anyway. Did you ever just think of going and trying to help out somebody else who's in trouble? I have people who call me and say, "Can you be my sponsor?" "Why? You've had a sponsor for you." "Yeah, but he's going through some trouble now. And he's not available for me." And anyway, you say, did you ever think it's time for you to be available for him? Maybe it's time for you to be available for that sponsor. So the bottom line here is those awarenesses, becoming conscious, and getting a feeling of goodness about who you are and what you're doing. And this living in the moment. You know, the book, as I said, says, "The one who has all power, may you find him now." If you take the word now, N-O-W, and spell it backwards, it's one. W-O-N. When you've learned to live in the now, you've won. It's the only place you can live. I love to hear people say things like, "Well, I have trouble living in the now." Well, where the hell do you think you are? You know, like, where are you right at this moment? Well, I'm in Buffalo. You know, like, And the deal is that, and even when we think back, as we say, thinking of the past, we're thinking of that past from this now. And even when we're projecting out to the future, we're projecting that future from this now. It's always now. Time runs horizontal, but eternity runs vertically. You know, it runs this way. I'm right in this moment. And when you look at people and tell them, "I'm trying to live this way," They sometimes think that, you know, you're out there where the buses don't run, you know, like, Ken's a good guy, but sometimes when you talk to him, I think he's out there where, you know, the buses just don't go, you know. So the deal is that you learn to laugh a lot here. And I'll tell you something that a lot of people don't know, and that is, that laughter is one of the most spiritual things you can do. Because it's not only healthy for you, but the fact is that you cannot think and laugh at the same time. It's impossible. So every time you're laughing, you're getting a respite from your favorite topic, which is you, you know? So, like right now, like, yeah, right, see? Young lady got it down pretty good, like, yeah, you know. The song for AA should be, "I am always on my mind, I am always on my mind," you know. And so the bottom line here is this whole spiritual thing that sometimes when I hear people talk about it, they make it sound so ethereal that no one's ever going to find God. And the deal is nobody's ever lost him. You know, that's the secret. God is constantly present all the time to tap into. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, you get to see demonstrations of that. You know, one week you see somebody who is like, you know, he couldn't find the ocean if he was standing on the beach. And then a couple of months later, they're growing and working and helping somebody else. God has this program rigged so that even if you can't stay sober yourself, you can help other people. I know a lot of people who are sober by getting help from people who can't stay sober. You know, I always remember that Bill, till the day he died, always considered Ebby his sponsor. And Ebby had a tough time staying sober. He didn't have great lengths of sobriety. His sobriety came and went. But when Bill was asked, who got you sober, you know, Ebby was the guy. So God has a great game here. The game is, he always wins. The game is, you only lose when you don't play the game. You know? And as long as you're thinking, you're in trouble. The three words you never want to hear an alcoholic say is, I've been thinking, you know. Because you know whatever comes next is really going to be a doozy, you know. You know. And alcoholics get locked into, it has to be their idea. You know, this is my idea, and I'm going to hold on to it until death do us part, you know. And I'm never going to give it up. But there's some new information. I don't want to hear it. There's a lot of experience. I don't want to hear the experience. I got this idea. You know, it's very much like the drunk cowboy in Texas. He's in the bar. And he comes out of the bar, and there's a prospector going through town with a mule. And this drunk cowboy says to this prospector, do you know how to dance? And the prospector says, no, I don't, sir. He said, well, you better learn. So he takes out his six guns and he starts shooting at his feet, and the prospector starts doing a little two-step. Eventually, the guns go click, click. He's out of bullets. The prospector leans over and pats his mule and pulls out his shotgun. And he said to the alcoholic, did you ever kiss a mule's ass? And without losing a beat, the alcoholic said, no, but I always wanted to. You know, like, that's the mindset of the alcoholic. It's, as long as it's my idea, I'll hold on to it. You know, I'll just hold on to it right up until the end. And the deal is with all of us, when you go to meetings and you get to hear people share, listen to how much I think, I believe, I feel, which really isn't about the deal. You know, if I just was out drinking today in my alcoholic stupor, I never got in trouble for what I thought, believed, or felt. I got in trouble for what I did or what I didn't do. That's what got me in trouble. You know, life... People talk about life like it's a noun. Life is a verb. You know, it's always action. There's always in the action. And that's why I used to love the old timers and still do, because when you get all done telling them your tale of woe, the first thing they tell you is, so how much service work you doing? Well, I just don't have time. I'm inventorying and I'm writing books and I'm going to seminars. I mean, I can't help this clown, you know, like a... And they just always used to come back to, well, you know, you're going to notice there's a correlation here between living a good life and being of service to other people. And sometimes that being of service is inconvenient. I hate to tell you that. But in the long run, it's what sustains us. There isn't a person in this room who throughout their life, and the longer you live, the more frequently this will happen, you'll be faced with situations in your life that will challenge who you are down to the depth of your core. And it's at that point that you're going to have to decide what sustains me. I can't always do something about the situation I'm right involved with, but I can always be of service to other people. And even if you're housebound, you can always get on the phone. You can always take an action. And that's the spiritual that I like to talk about. Not the ethereal stuff, you know, like people want to read from a book and then say, you know, if you do these 37 things and then and you follow this 18 path and... Well, I won't get into that, but... It's like watching somebody milk a mouse. know. It's a lot of activity, but very little milk, you know. I'm latched on to this idea, and it's my idea, and I'm going to milk it for all it's worth. And you just say, hey, you know, have fun, you know, like have fun. And when I don't know what to do, I call someone. I go to a meeting. I go down to the detox. I pick up some Yahoo, you know. I do things, it's just about ingrained in me that when I can't figure something out, it's time to do something, you know. And for alcoholics, you know, and I'm not talking about activity for me, I'm talking about activity for someone else. When you tell an alcoholic to be still, it's like a death-defying act, you know, like that. You know, and yet stillness is the language of God. You have to slow down. The whole of life is about, if you want to achieve a lot of material stuff, you have to speed up. If you want to achieve a lot of spiritual stuff, you have to slow down. And slowing down is very difficult for a lot of people. As I said, it's like a death-defying act. And yet, stillness is the language of God. Be still and know that I am God. You know, anything else is a really bad translation. It's just a bad translation. God is always in the moment, always available, and saying, if you need me, I'm here. And the deal is that, you know, it's like, yeah, I know you're there. Let me take care of this, you know. I got a good idea, you know. You know why? Because I've been thinking, you know. You know. So you stay on the sideline. If I need you, I'll whistle you into the game, you know. And then you wonder why, you know, it's like, you know, it's this mindset. You know, did you ever watch alcoholics? Really watch them. You know, it's like they go to a wedding, they want to be the bride, you know. They go to a funeral, they want to be the corpse, you know. And then they'll tell you, I want to be humble, you know, I want to do it humbly. I don't want to be seen, I just want to be noticed, you know. You know. Say, geez, you know, the only way you could say less is if you talk longer. You know, like the deal is that this business that we do here, like on the little this morning thing, this is not about me telling you anything new. This is not about me learning something new necessarily, but it's about sharing what we all know that sometimes we just don't allow enough time to get with. You know, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is really great in slowing you down and getting you into an action that is going to lead to you helping other people. And the whole point is so you can grow spiritually. And as you grow spiritually, the world gets bigger and bigger. Do you ever notice when you were sitting on a bar stool how small the world was? You know, and you had that suction cup right under you, you know, like in there. And you always talked about what you were going to do. Oh, next year when I live in New York, next year I'm going to Florida. You know, and I'm going to hunt in the Kilimanjaro. And you never heard that puck because because somebody would be buying me a drink or I would be buying me a drink, you know. And so I never heard the big puck. So without the big puck, I just sat there and my whole life became past and future and absolutely no now. And that's why I had no relationship with God. I had no relationship. I mean, I had a theoretical God. But if you're not dealing with God as the great reality, as the book refers to him, deep down inside every man, woman, and child is the great reality. And if you're not dealing with that, then everything else is a concept. If you're not dealing with God in the moment, then God is a concept. You just talk about him. You know, oh yeah, God, sure, yeah. Good guy. You know, I learned a lot about him in school, you know. And what do you do with him now? Now, yeah. I'm running my life. I haven't got time for God. You know, he's got to take care of himself. And the deal is that we just don't allow the time. And that's all this little bozo stuff is this morning. It's a slowdown time. It's like, you know, when you're working with newcomers, sometimes you have to do things for them that are really, really significant. I have found out that visuals, complex, intriguing, baffling, mysteries are what newcomers love. So I have them do things like, I have a snow scene in a ball, and I have them pick it up and shake it. And then I have them put it down. And then we watch it. And I say, did you ever notice that when you shake it up, it's a mess? When you put it down and leave it alone, it goes right back to normal. Deep stuff. Stuff that a newcomer can look at and go, wow. Yes, yeah. Or have them put their hand when you're at the restaurant, you know, in a glass of water, finger in a glass of water and spin it. And then take it out. Watch it. Watch it. Watch it. And then have it go back to normal. And go, see? Everything has a natural order. Again, man, you deep. I mean, like, the snow scene and the water? Wow. This is heavy, man. You know, like, this is heavy. I'm going to keep coming back, you know. These are guys that think that Moby Dick is a venereal disease. They don't, you know, like, these are not the brightest bulbs in the room, you know. That's why we call them newcomers, you know, like, and I say that with all due respect for the people of you here. But your best idea has gotten you here. You know, that's a little jingle. Your best idea has gotten you here. Drank too much beer. Oh, well, anyway. So the deal is that you just realize that when you get them here, I have found out if you can get a newcomer laughing, you have a chance of keeping that newcomer coming back. Nobody wants to go to a meeting where somebody is up there going,
if you want, but I have. You'll keep coming back.
You say, God, you know, guy should have been a hemorrhoid. You know, like, he had a hemorrhoid. Look at the way that face is contorting, you know, like. So the bottom line is that that's the kind of simple stuff you have to do. And when you cannot have rabbit stew until you have a rabbit. So you got to give that newcomer some hope. And if you're just beating them up all the time, there's not much hope in that. You know, I remember when I came in, you know, I was no day at the beach. You know, my sponsor used to look at me sometimes and say, you know, you're no day at the beach. You know? And I knew exactly what he meant because my mother used to say that, you know. My mother used to say, don't think, turn on the TV. You know, like, she wouldn't want me thinking because, whoo. So the bottom line is that in Alcoholics Anonymous, we have a big book. And that big book is predicated on spiritual principles. And the whole spiritual principle is being of service to other people. Don't worry about so much what's happening to you. If it was meant to happen to you, it's going to happen. If it wasn't meant to happen to you, it won't happen. This is heavy, complex theory here. I hope you're getting it. You know, this isn't Einstein's theory of relativity. This is like this really heavy stuff. And the deal is that when you hear an alcoholic laugh for the first time, it's almost like they're embarrassed, you know? I would say the most obscene things to newcomers. I mean, I would do anything to get them laughing, you know, anything. And one guy came in one night, he had a gun, he was going to take over the meeting. I mean, you know, like, and I said, good, that's what we need, somebody with a gun taking over the meeting. I said, let me get on your side. Let me get over here, you know. Like, you always wanted to be where the action is, you know. So the deal is that, and when you reach a certain point in life, as you get older, as they say, you realize that there's only so much time, psychological time, that's left to you. And you don't want to spend it being angry and upset and stuff. So you want to practice these principles all the time. I've learned little tricks, you know. There was a great prophet one time, and he was crucified. And at the last moment, he said, forgive them, Father, they know not what they do. forgive them. I love that story. But I love the story right before it when it said there were two other guys there with him. And the one guy said, you're nobody. And the other guy, right at the crucial moment, said, you know, I believe you are who you say you are. And that guy was promised paradise. This day, you'll be with me in paradise. And that's what this is about, learning to be here in paradise. Paradise is right here if you're sober. If you're sober, you're in paradise. If you're sitting in one of these chairs, you already won. You know, guys said to me, I never won anything in my life. I said, do you know that when your father ejaculated, there were like 200,000 sperms that were rushing for one egg? You won! You won! Well, don't tell me you never win! You want to go to the track and bet 200,000 to one? You won, you know. Even a clock that's broke is right twice a day. You know this. Don't get this stuff in your head, you know, about that you're a loser. You're not a loser. You're just someone who hasn't tapped into the source yet. And that's why in the back when it talks about the spiritual appendix of the book, it says, you tap into an inner resource. There's an inner resource there. And most of us don't spend any time mining it. We spend our time with our best ideas, going to seminars, listening to nonsense. And the deal is, everything I needed I was given when I was sent out from the home office. And all I have to do is tap back into that. And if I spend my days being of service to you guys, and you guys, there's a New York for you guys. Yeah. If I spend my days being of service to you folks, and I don't get caught up in all this little trivial stuff, then what happens is I get to see a bigger and bigger picture of life. You know, I grew up in the 40s, and you know, the deal was if you go to the movies in the 40s, they always had these big endings. And at the end of the movie, they always have a fade-out shot. And you'd start with maybe a man and a woman kissing, and you end up with North America, for God's sake. You know, and the music would build up and stuff. And that's what being sober is. It's getting a bigger and bigger picture. And actually hearing the music, you know. Some gal said to me years back, she took me to see this movie Titanic. I said, I don't want to go. I know how it turns out. You know, like I... And she said, come on, it's a big movie. So we went and we waited in line for 6 days and 12 nights and finally got in to see it and I knew the ending. And I think I'm going to sit here and this. So when it was all over, she said, what did you think of that movie? And I said, I'm really glad I came. And she said, you liked the movie? I said, not necessarily. The movie was okay. I said, but when we got here, the screen was blank. And then for like 3 hours, something was on that screen. And I completely forgot it was blank. But now that the movie's over, the screen is back being blank again. And the screen in my life is God. I keep putting stuff on the screen that distracts me from the reality that's there all the time. And I make up these scenarios that make it look like I'm doing stuff when I'm not doing anything. You know? I'm busy with projects that go nowhere. You know? And I have mindsets of things that need to be done that nobody gives a hoot. And I miss out on the big reality, which is the blank screen that's there all the time for me to see. But I can't see it. Because I keep projecting other stuff up there. And being sober is getting more time to see the great reality. That's really what it amounts to. It's not some ethereal thing. It's not another seminar. It's just being still and allowing God to be present in my life. And that's really what I wish for all you folks, because it has brought me happiness that I couldn't possibly imagine. You know, I'm the youngest of seven, and there's four kids left. and three of them have died behind this thing. And two died a week apart. One died on Christmas Day of 85 of cirrhosis, and one died a week later on New Year's Day. And we buried my brother and sister a week apart. And I stepped over my sister's grave to put my brother in the ground. And that night, my nephew went out and got picked up for drunk driving. So I just don't understand what happens when with drinking. I just know if you have the gene of alcohol, then you're in big trouble. And there are some people you can see it in so young. Carol and I never watched this thing, but the other night there was something on about people who were stealing cars and doing this reckless driving and the cops chasing them. It was a 12-year-old kid who stole a car in Miami. And he's going down the causeway, hitting cars and doing all kinds of stuff. And finally, they get him, and they don't know it's a 12-year-old till they get there, and they come up, and they have guns, and they open the door, and there's a 12-year-old kid sitting there. And the cop says, "Son, you are in big trouble." To which the kid responds, "No, I'm not. I have my seatbelt on." A kid like that, you give him a big book right away. You know, like, you just say, "Hey, give him a big book. Hey, we'll see you later, pal," you know. "We will see you later, most definitely." Our charge here is really simple, by God as I understand them. And that our charge is to take really good care of one another, because we're only on loan. And people are going to come into your life and go out of your life. You know, when you're involved with another human being in a relationship, there's only three things that can happen. That person can die, they can leave, or they can change. But they're never going to stay the same. And that's the fun of life, is learning to be with people, realizing that stuff is in progress all the time. And our job simply is to take care of one another. And if we do that, then life has a good meaning for us, and you live a good life. You know, we used to have a guy, he passed away now, but Lewis. And Lewis was a great role model for AA. He lived in a little silver bullet trail home. And you couldn't get anything else in there, including Lewis. Most of the time you sit outside. And Lewis would come to the meetings, and if he didn't like what you were saying, he'd open the Reader's Digest and start to read the word power. And he'd have his finger in where the answers were, and then the words up front. And he'd be switching back and forth. And after the meeting, you always had a newcomer, somebody with 5, 10, 15, 20 years, go over to him and say, "Lewis, that's not the way you do that. The way you do that is you look at the word, and then there are four selections there. You select the one you think comes closest to the word. And then when you're all done, you go to the back of the book and you look at the answer." And Lewis said, "So you want me to guess?" He said, "Right, if you don't know." And Lewis said, "Why would I guess if I know where the answer is?" See, that's the kind of guy you want to hang out with. That's the kind of guy. So simple. Keeps life so simple. I was at another meeting where they were talking about making decisions, and you should have heard the nonsense that people, "I call my sponsor, I do an inventory, I go to a seminar, and 3 years later I say, okay, I'll do it." You know, like, and Lewis got up there and he reached in his pocket and he said, "When I have a decision to make," he pulled out a silver dollar and he flipped it. He said, "Heads, I do it this way, tails, I do it that way. I'm sober 40 years. I can live with it either way." And that's the secret of Alcoholics Anonymous. Regardless of what's going on, being able to live with it either way. And being accepting of the fact that you don't have to, you know, the people who are the happiest aren't always the people who have the most, but they're the people who make the most of what they have. And I've seen people who don't have nickel one who were the most abundant people I've ever seen. And I've seen other people wanting to hoard this stuff to the point where they can't move and it's not enough. And the deal is, you can only lose what you do not own. When you work the steps and you practice the traditions and the concepts in your life, what you have inside, you cannot lose. Regardless of what happens to the economy, the world, you cannot lose it. It is yours. It is permanently yours because you have worked with God to get it. And so what I would say to you today is, remember, you're going to be in a lot of situations today. You may not have the capacity to make them better, but you always have the capacity to make them worse. So try to be the positive, person in there. You know, try to be, say something positive all the time. You know, and even sometimes it's difficult. You know, it's like the mouse who went out one night cruising the bars, and Mr. Mouse picked up Mrs. Elephant, and he took her home, and they made passionate love all night long. And in the morning when Mr. Mouse woke up, he's rubbing his eyes, he looks over, and there's Mrs. Elephant. She's on her back, her legs are in the air, she's dead as a doornail. And Mr. Mouse says, "Wow, one night of fun, and I spend the rest of my life digging a grave." You know, like, you know, don't get caught up in that mindset. Get caught up in the mindset that in God's world, everything is okay. If it wasn't meant to be, it wouldn't be. And that's the toughest lesson we all have to learn. That what's happening is what's supposed to be happening, because even though we don't see the benefit of it, some benefit is coming from it. And the last thing I would say in closing this morning, besides thanking you for letting me come here and be a little dopey, is the fact that at some level, you have a conscious contact with God. Your whole purpose in life is to work on getting that so it's more conscious to you for a longer period of time. It's basically extending the God zone in your life. You know, in football season, they have the red zone. But every day, there's the God zone. Try to get more in tune in the God zone. I remember when my kids were small, and it reminded me of God in a way, because they used to like to stand on the refrigerator where I would put them and jump into my arms. I never once thought, I think I'll drop them just for kicks. You know, like, that thought never entered my mind. And that's the way it is with God. We make this leap of faith. It's not logical. If you wait around to get logical, forget it. It's not going to happen. You have to make this leap of faith, this quantum leap, and just say, "I don't know a lot about this, but I'm willing to make this leap." And the very fact that you're sober and that I'm sober today, when we could never stay sober before, should lead anybody to the conclusion that there's some power greater than ourselves. If you are ever working with a newcomer, I'm going to give you one visual and then we're done. And that is, how many in here think their right hand is their strongest hand? If you're going to open ketchup or something, you use right hand. How many think it's their left hand? Okay. You're over 21, I think most of you. Put your hands together like this and push as hard as you can. And tell me which hand wins. Neither one. And the reason for that is the ability to change and the ability not to change is coming from the same place. So what Bill and the boys figured out back in 35 is, instead of going through life like that, relax those hands and ask for that power to come into your life that can give you the peace which this world cannot give. God bless you.